So it's my great pleasure to welcome, for the first time, to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Solala Towler. Stuart and I had the great pleasure of speaking with him on our radio show, The Mystical Positivist, a few months ago, about his latest book. I think it's his latest book.
Yeah.
Practicing the Tao Te Ching, 81 Steps on the Way, which I highly recommend. It's a wonderful, not just meditation on the 81 verses, but also as a set of practices to do in association with those. So I encourage you to check it out on your way out. But tonight, Solala is going to do something that I don't think we've ever done before in the store. We've had plenty of tea, uh-huh. And we had plenty of meditation, but we haven't had tea and Tao. So please join me in welcoming... Oh, I should also mention, he is the editor, a longtime editor. He just told me they're about to have their 24th anniversary of The Empty Vessel, a wonderful Taoist philosophy and practice magazine, some copies of which are here if you are interested to check out later. So he has a lot of credentials and a number of books, projects. He's in fact here in the Bay Area to do a conference over the weekend. And I hope you will join me in welcoming Solala Towler to Many Rivers Books and Tea.
Yeah, we had such a great time talking on the phone with these guys that when they were like, hey, that's one of my homies from Eugene. We just had such a great time, such a great communication and communion. That when I told them I was going to be here in October for the conference in Oakland, they said, why don't you come to the store? And so it's really a great honor to be able to come here. And I've got another old homie there, Michael Bernaldini, so it's really nice to be here. And yes, what I do is what I call Tea and Tao. How many people here are familiar with Pu'er tea? Could you raise your hand? So a lot of people. Great. Because we're going to be drinking couple different kinds of Pu'er here tonight. Tea in Taoism is part of the spiritual practice. Tea, music, we're going to have a little music here. It's all part of the meditation. It's all part of what they call the Yang Sheng, or nourishing life practice. And the way I do these tea ceremonies, one of my teachers, Wu Jiang Shen, calls Pin Ming Lun Dao, means savor tea, discuss Tao. So usually when we say drink tea, we would say he cha, drink tea. But in this case, instead of just saying drinking, it's pin, which means really savoring. And the character for pin is three mouths, two up at the top and one down at the bottom. And then cha is, well, we usually say tea, but in this case we say ming because we're drinking high quality tea. All this tea that we'll be drinking tonight, it's not the most expensive tea, but I usually pay at least $100 for a brick of tea to get good quality tea. You can spend thousands of dollars for good tea. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting two toes in, really. So it's a part of, it's a spiritual practice. And I have actually a couple of notes here. I have many Qigong and Taoist teachers, but I have this one tea teacher, Wu Jiang Shen, who I think Michael knows, who lives in Sweden right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he has some really great books. And I just have a couple of quotes from his book, which is, in classical Chinese culture, Pin, this character Pin, also is the way of study and achievement of enlightenment. If we know how to pin or savor the tea, Pin holds the secret of the universe. If we pick up the teacup and just swallow the tea without paying any attention to the tea, then drinking the tea will be meaningless to us. With heartfelt observation during our tea drinking, we can learn the Tao of tea, including the knowledge of the tea, the healing and cultivation functions of the tea, and the philosophy behind the drinking of the tea. And the last one is, when most people drink tea, they are not aware that some meaningful universal secret is hidden within the drinking pattern. Drinking is not merely drinking. It becomes a much different experience. This is the spirit of tea, the Tao of tea. So you'll see we'll do a little bit of ritual in the beginning, just to kind of set it up for, you know, anything you do with your whole consciousness, anything that you do as a meditation, anything that you do as a practice, you know, it can be many different kinds of things. There's a phrase in Chinese called Kung Fu. And most people in the West think of Kung Fu as martial arts. Kung Fu means something that you practice, that you really put your whole spirit into. And so you attain a level of mastery, or at least the beginnings of mastery. And everyone has their own Kung Fu. You know, it can be tea, it can be martial arts, it can be gardening, you know, sculpture. You know, anything that you really put your heart and soul into becomes your Kung Fu. You know, this book that I wrote recently, the Tao Te Ching. Tao Te Ching, most people here familiar with Tao Te Ching?
Yeah.
It's the second most widely translated book in the world. So I always say it's been a bestseller for 2,500 years. And most people think of Tao Te Ching as a book of philosophy. And it's actually a book of, it's a manual for self-cultivation. And if you know how to read it, and most people don't, there's a lot of mistranslations, or people who are practitioners don't translate it, so they don't know. But that's why in mine, I really try to bring out the Taoist teaching for each chapter, and I wrote a practice for every chapter. Mm-hmm. So instead of just reading this book, you actually have a practice to do, a Qigong practice, meditation practice, lifestyle practice, that relates to that chapter, so that you really make it a part of your life. Because Lao Tzu talks a lot about the difference between head knowledge and belly knowledge. You know, in the West, we really emphasize head knowledge, intellectual knowledge. And a lot of times it just gets people in more trouble. And the Taoists talk about belly knowledge. It's a different kind of knowledge. It's a knowledge, you know, in modern science, they talk about the connection between the brain, and that there's a brain in the stomach also, in the gut. And of course they're connected by the vagus nerve, but there's all kinds of like brain cell type cells in the gut also. So, you know, we used to talk about going with your gut, you know, that gut feeling is more of a feeling of not it coming from your brain, from your head. It's something that's coming from your gut or your heart. So that's what that is. And I have a book, I'm going to share a story with you from the Taoist tradition, from a book of mine called Cha Dao, which is the way of tea. Tea is a way of life. Which for some of us, like Michael and I, some of us who, what I call tea people, you know, some of the folks here, tea is our way of life. You know, and we really put a lot of attention and intention on the way we make the tea, the way we appreciate the tea, the way we appreciate where the tea comes from. You know, we honor the tea. I get my tea from people that I know, who get it from people they know in China, so I know it's organic, it's old, from old growth, it's not, you know, it's good quality. I'm going to pass this. This is very good quality tea here. I'm just going to pass this around, especially for folks who aren't used to this tea. You can get a sense, and feel free to smell it. It has a very earthy smell, Pu'er tea. Pu'er tea, for those of you who don't know, and for those of you who already know, is a fermented tea. In olden days, they would pick this kind of tea. It's a large leaf tea in southwest China, Yunnan province, and then they would pick it and just process it minimally, and then put it on the shelf for 20 years, and then it would be good to drink. And if you leave it there longer, it gets even better and better, but 20 years minimum. But nowadays, even in China, nobody wants to do it, wait 20 years. So now this kind of tea, this is called Shou Pu'er, and later on we'll have some raw pu'er. This kind of tea is kind of fast-tracked. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, they take it, they process it, and then they pile it and wet it and put it under these thermal blankets, and they let it, sometimes they even inoculate it, and it's left to sit and ferment on its own. But it only takes about 6 weeks instead of 20 years. So you can get raw tea 20, 30 years old, but you're going to pay $1,000 at least for it, or more. So this tea is the fast fact tea. But it has a lot of health qualities because it's fermented, it's naturally fermented. So it's really good for digestion, and there's very little caffeine for people who are sensitive to caffeine. And for people who haven't had pu'er tea, you'll notice it's a very earthy taste also. And if any point during the evening, if anyone has a question, please just raise your hand, okay? Sure.
I was wondering, so it grows tea, all these teas grow on bushes, right?
Well, originally all teas grew in trees. A lot of the pu'er comes in the old growth forests. It's from teas. And it was in later years when they started transplanting it to other parts of China, they grew it as bushes because it's, of course, a lot easier to pick. If they, like in this is a tea field in Wudao Mountain. So it's much easier to pick than the trees. But the really old tea comes on trees.
And the trees live very long lives.
Hundreds of years. I have some friends in Taiwan who have a tea ashram there. And you can go there and you can stay there and you do Zen meditation and eat vegetarian food and do lots of tea ceremony. And it's all free. And people come from all over the world there.
What part of Taiwan? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, they're in the Mali area. And they go on these pilgrimages to Yunnan Province, southwestern China. Mm-hmm. And they connect with these tribal people who take them up in the mountains. And there's trees like 1,200 years old. And there's especially some of them have little altars and stuff in front of them where the local people have come to almost like worship there. For hundreds of years. So there's a real special feeling in those old growth forests. Like any old growth forest, even here, you go to the redwoods, you know, there's something about those old trees. Right? My teacher, my Taoist teacher, watching me, says the ancient Taoists spent time with old growing things like trees and mountains and water. They made friends with the moon and the stars. He says their lives were so long as to be unimaginable to us today. Because they connected to old growing things, slow growing things, which is another big aspect of Taoism, a principle of Taoism, going slow. And Wu Wei, people familiar with the principle of Wu Wei? Anybody here not? Nobody? Everybody knows Wu Wei. Oh.
No. Uh-huh. I can't remember what it means.
Oh, thank you. Yum, yum. Uwe, translated directly in English, means not doing. But what it means is not forcing, not overdoing, not trying to make something happen, but more setting up the environment to allow something magical to happen. Because real magic happens, you know, you can't force real magic, right? Mm-hmm. It has this, what you do is you set up the environment and you set up your mind intent and you open your heart. And then you let the magic grow on its own. None of this is what I meant to say. But I'm so immersed in all this stuff, you know, it just goes from one thing to another. Yes?
This is a basic, probably really stupid question, but I didn't know anything about it. I don't know anything about Taoism or uh-huh. teasing. I've been doing meditation since I was 20. But I'm wondering, what is the spiritual thing about, why is tea magical? What is that?
Well, I'm going to share a story with you in a little while that really responds to that. But it's more like, you know, you don't have to drink expensive pu'er tea. You could drink Lipton tea. Although I would recommend coming here and getting it from these guys. But it's really the mindset, the attitude, the heartness that you bring to it. And you just have an old battered cup and make cheap tea, but if you have the right meditation, the right concentration, the right thankfulness and joyfulness, I think it's helpful when you have a really good quality tea. It helps set that up.
That's part one reason I was kind of, because I'm poor. I can't afford to go and buy tea.
Yes.
You know.
No, you'll see tonight. We're going to do a little bit of a ritual and you'll see. See, this kind of tea. Oh, okay. So the other thing about this tea is, once it's all wet, it's wet and it's fermented, then they wring it out a little bit more, dry it, and then they compress it into these cakes. Now this is, you'll see it, this is a really hard cake. This tea will last hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, if you bought a thing of this and kept it for 100 years, 100 years from now, you could sell it for a lot more than you paid for it.
Mm-hmm. So any brick tea that would last for a year?
Any good quality pu'er tea, yeah.
What about bad quality pu'er?
Well, it's not going to get any better, but anything. This is called show pu'er. This is cooked pu'er. We'll try some raw pu'er in a little while called sheng pu'er. This show pu'er will last. Sometimes they'll find a cake from the Forbidden City that somebody like overlooked, and there are people in China that spend $40,000-$50,000 for that. Part of it's because like a famous painting, you know. I doubt they're really going to drink it even. They're probably going to stick it somewhere, right, and keep it there. But this tea will last a long, long time. And you don't need very much either. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent $100 for a round of this, but it makes many, many, many pots of tea. But you have to break it open because it's so compressed. And I don't want to make it too strong for you guys. And so this way of serving tea is called Kung Fu tea. So what we're going to do is, and this is like this great, those of you who are familiar with this, there's a tray under here because there's a lot of water play that goes on here. So you'll see me pouring water everywhere, and it goes into this tray underneath there.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So the people come to my house for tea, and they see I'm pouring the water out everywhere, and they don't know what's going on. So this is hot water already? This is pretty hot? Do I hit disperse?
Unlock button.
Oh, unlock. And then dispense.
Yeah. There you go. You got it?
Okay.
Yeah,
cool. Oh, the other thing is the tea ware.
Take a picture of that. It's so strange.
Yeah. This kind of tea ware, this is a kind of clay called Yixing clay. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, this is a clay that's been used for tea utensils for hundreds of years. It's a very porous clay, so it's really good to use for tea. As a matter of fact, some people say if I use this for years and years, it kind of soaks up the tea so that at some point I can pour hot water and pour out tea. Speaking of magic. So what I'm doing now is I'm just heating the pot, which is like British people do that, right?
Mm-hmm. They make tea. What water temperature?
You want it really, really hot for this kind of tea, because this kind of tea is so compressed. You
so
want
close
it
to boiling,
so it'll open it up. And you'll notice when...
Oh my gosh.
Usually I would also rinse all these cups, but there's a little too many and I don't want to use up all the water.
Is this your favorite tea? Or
one of them.
Do you drink it every day?
Or oh yeah, I drink different kinds of tea every day, yeah. I start off my day with green tea. Dragon well tea that I get in Hangzhou, where it's grown.
That's supposed to be the most expensive, right?
No, green tea is not expensive. Where you get expensive is this kind of rare or aged pu'er teas. Do we have to unlock it every time?
Yeah, you have to unlock it again.
So I'm just going to let it sit for a few minutes, and then I'm going to pour the first steeping out. This is the steeping that's called washing the leaves, or what I call waking the leaves up. So how many people we have? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 19, 20. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. I was in Colorado last month at a Taoist conference up in the mountains, and I served tea to 50 people. I had an assistant. We went around both sides of the room. It was huge. Matter of fact, I met Liz. What's that?
Do you need an assistant here with this?
I don't know. Let me. I might.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to pour this one out.
What would it taste like?
I would drink it.
I know. But it's really, this is really about opening the leaves up. We really want to do this so that we really get the best out of the tea. The other thing about this little bit of tea that you can steep this tea like 15 times. You can get like 15 pots out of good quality tea. So in that way, it's not really that expensive. We have a friend who had to go on antibiotics for like 3 months for some terrible infection, and it totally ruined his digestive system, and he took probiotics for months and nothing worked, and then he started drinking this pu'er tea every day and it totally cleared it up.
What kind of infection?
I don't know. It must have been something pretty nasty to take antibiotics for 3 months. Sure. Oh, part of it's also is that this tea, you know, these are leaves that grew on a tree in a forest. The tea trees have roots that go down sometimes hundreds of feet, way, way, way down. And, you know, as we know now, in forests, the trees communicate with each other through their root system. And so there's this idea that there's a kind of wisdom, there's a kind of, you know, knowledge that comes from these trees, that grows from their roots into their trunks, into their leaves. So when we are drinking the leaves, we also get to share in this wisdom of old, slowly growing things, right? Mm. And then, of course, the leaves are really dried out and processed. So they're like really almost like dead leaves at this point. But through the alchemy of putting hot water in them, in the right kind of pot, we awaken the leaves. Mm. So suddenly there's qi in the leaves, there's qi in the tea. We call the cha qi. The chi of the tea. So it's like an alchemical transformation that happens. And then when we drink the tea, another alchemical transformation happens within us.
You want to talk about tea trunk?
Yeah. If you drink a lot of tea, you can get what they call tea drunk. And it's not a caffeinated, buzzy kind of feeling. It's more of just like a light-hearted, happy feeling. But you have to drink tea for like a couple of hours. And I don't know if we have that as much time tonight.
You don't want to send a bunch of junks out on the road, do
we? Yeah. We're going to need designated drivers.
Look how dark it is.
And you see, this tea is very dark.
Mm-hmm.
And it will get darker the more I steep it also. Once I steep it maybe 9 times, it'll start lighting up. But I wanted to share a couple other teas with you, so I won't do it that much. Just over here. Okay. And I can't put too much in the cup because there's so many people that drink it. Get a homeopathic dose for this first batch. I have a dedicated room in my house for tea. And we have a big tea table, and we sit on the floor, and we have one of these things, so that I have plenty of space to do all this. Oh no, there's one more. Uh-oh. A fly just went into this one. I'll save this one. Woo! Gold growth pu'er tea! Give me some of that!
Better to do a brick tea or a loose leaf?
Better to do what?
To drink loose leaf or
Well, I drink loose leaf green tea. You can get loose leaf pu'er tea also. I just get a kick out of the bricks and breaking it up and everything. It's all part of it. So when you get the tea, don't drink it yet, because we're going to do a little bit of a ritual. So we begin by holding the tea cup with these two fingers, the thumb in your first finger, and then your middle finger under it to kind of anchor it. Everybody see that?
It's your ring finger.
Ring finger.
Actually, not your middle finger.
I have a lot of rings, so I didn't remember which is the ring finger. I have many ring fingers. And we hold the tea in front of our heart first. This way we connect the cha tea to our shen, our spirit, our heart. We kind of give a little thanks for the tea, for the tree, and for the people who picked the tea and processed the tea and sent it all the way over here where I picked it up and or where I ordered it from, and then we get to drink it. And the first thing we do in Taoism, we do things in three, magical threes. A lot of cultures around the world do things in threes. So in three, we have something called the three treasures: Jing, Qi, and Shen. Jing is kind of like our central core energy, the kind we receive from our parents at conception. And then Qi is like the vital life force. Shen is the spirit. So when we start by looking at the tea, especially it's nice in these white cups, we can admire the color of the tea. It's very dark, very different kind of tea probably than you've had before. So this connects through our eyes to our Shen, to our spirit. And then we smell the tea, you know, very earthy smell. And that connects to our qi body. And then when we taste the tea, which we'll do in a moment, it connects to our jing part of our body. And because we like to do things in threes, we take three sips first. The first sip you taste with the tip of your tongue, the second with the middle of your tongue, and the third with the back of your tongue. And sometimes it tastes very different. And if it's too hot, you can also, it's fine to slurp. It's good manners to slurp. Mm-hmm. And really just feel that qi of the tea, of the tree, of the plant, entering your body and going through your whole system. And while these tea leaves dance together a little bit, we're going to have a little music, so we can all just kind of really sit for a moment and really feel the energy of that tree, that feel that alchemy that's happening in your own body right now, even with that little taste of tea. Mm-hmm. nose as we inhale, our abdomen expands. As we exhale, our abdomen contracts. We're bringing in oxygen, chi, healing energy through our nose down into our lower abdomen. Really, if you have any kind of pain or disease, when you breathe in, inhale healing chi, like healing light, like golden light, into your nose, down into your body. And if you have any place where you want to direct that healing energy, send it to that place. If you don't have any place in particular, just let the golden light come in and go wherever it needs to go. So you breathe in the golden light. When you exhale, you imagine all the disease, the pain, the stress going out of your nose, out into the air like a black cloud, like black smoke. So you inhale golden light, exhale black smoke. Tip of your tongue is on the roof of your mouth. Connecting to the important chi pathways of your body, up back and down the front.
means it's diluted a little more, or
if you
steep it and it's not this dark. If you have it this real like a light brown or something.
You can do it any way, you know, whatever strength that you enjoy.
But if it's a light brown, it's the lightest strength, always.
Yeah.
Always, okay.
Yeah. A lot of times people aren't quite sure when they're first introduced to pu'er if it's something you really like. But I can, from personal experience, tell you it really grows on you.
Could you tell me your fingers?
Oh, yes, the first two fingers, and then the ring finger underneath.
This one?
Yeah. And then you hold it in front of your heart to kind of connect the heart chi and the cha chi. And you don't have to do the whole three sips routine for every cup. Maybe when we change teas, we will. Especially in the beginning. You know, anything can become a ritual, right? A ritual is really something that communicates across our modern brain into what they call the reptile brain, the old part of our brain. Mm-hmm. You know, and anything practice that we do, like I was talking about the kung fu, you know, his kung fu is playing this flute. You know, it's something you really put your heart and spirit into. So your heart and spirit comes through it. Like when we listen to him play that beautiful music that was coming straight from his heart out here. You know, it just touches you in a way that just putting on a record doesn't. Although sometimes records can touch you that way, of course. Especially the flute, because the flute is just a hollow piece of wood with holes in it. And you have to use your own breath, your own chi. And we were talking at dinner about his teacher didn't just show him how to hold the flute, but how to run his energy, if I'm saying this correctly, how to run his energy so that when he played the flute. Because this flute, the shakuhachi, is the most difficult flute in the world to play. Very difficult to even make a sound on it, never mind make music on it. And it goes back very ancient traditions in Japan, and especially in Zen traditions, they would play the shakuhachi. In Taoist temples in China, people play a similar kind of flute called a sho, or they also play a ditsa called a ditsa, a transverse flute. But all the temples, people play music as part of their meditation. And tea in China and Japan is always part of the meditation also. China, you know, tea went from China to Japan, where it was taken up by usually by the monks and used medicinally. So I wanted to share a story from my book here. This book was a real labor of love, because it's really about living your life with tea mind. And it's part of that Wu-wei, the way of Wu-wei. It's the way of what we call the water course way. You know, of being with the flow, of being able to be sensitive enough to know what the flow is, and then how to flow with it, and how to find your own flow. You know, because some people are really good at going out and getting a lot of things done and being very young. Other people are much, if they try to force themselves into that, they really don't do well. Other people are really much more reflective and really stay home and work on their own spirit. And sometimes we do both. You know, I have a lot of time for reflection. I have a tea room in my house. I have a temple behind my house. But then I get to travel around and meet cool people and go to cool events and see cool parts of the country. So I'm going to take up that fella's offer of helping. And while he's passing this tea around, I'm going to share this story. Now, this story involves this fellow named Liu Yu. Liu Yu is the most famous traditional master of tea in Tang Dynasty China. Tang Dynasty is considered, like, along with Han Dynasty, the golden age of Chinese culture. And usually I have them, I either take the cup so I don't want to pour any hot tea on their fingers. So
okay, I'll take the cup.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
When was the Tang Dynasty?
Tang Dynasty is like 800s AD, or CE, what we say CE now. And Liu Yu wrote a famous book called the Cha Jing. Cha Jing is the like Tao De Jing, the Jing means classical book. Tao De Jing, people, you know, a lot of the thing with Taoism is, you know, it's a foreign language, it's a mystical language, a lot of things are mistranslated and not understood. Dao, of course, means, you know, the source of all life. De, which is usually translated as virtue, actually means something more like spiritual power. So there's a virtue aspect of it, but it really means like spiritual potency. So that's why this considered like mountains, nature has more natural duh in nature that you can go out and be in nature and you can actually pick up on that to strengthen your own duh. And interesting, which is why, you know, many cultures, holy people have gone to the mountains, right, or the desert or the forest. So Liu Yu wrote this very famous book, and in this book he did this real, you know, he wrote a lot about what kind of water to use, what kind of implements. It was very complicated with all the stuff he had to use. But then at the end of his book, he starts saying, well, if you're in the mountains, you don't need this, this, and this. And if you're hiking, you don't need this, this, and this. And nobody really knows why he suddenly dropped all that off. So this is my interpretation of the story of why he would do that. And also through him meeting this funny tea guy out in the forest of the spirit of tea. Kind of talks about what the spirit of tea is, and it's called Liu Yu meets a true tea master. Yeah, I bet. I just had cataract surgery a couple weeks ago, and the whole world is a much more colorful, clear place for me. But I can't read without readers now. Liu Yu was famous in Chang'an, which is now Xi'an, which was the capital of China in the Tang Dynasty. Liu Yu was famous in Chang'an as the master of the Way of Tea. He had been working on his masterpiece, his treatise about tea, for some time and was almost finished. In it, he listed all the most important aspects of the Way of Tea, from describing the different sorts of tea, what utensils to use, how to prepare it, even what type of water to use. There's a story that he went to visit a friend of his, and the guy was very excited, the tea master's coming, so he told his servant to take the boat out in the middle of the river and get the water from where the water's really flowing, really clean. So he got a thing of water, and then when he was almost to the edge, the boat bumped on something and some of the water spilled. So he took a little water from the edge of the river and put it in so he could fill the pot. And so Liu Yu came and he's drinking the tea going, this is pretty good tea. And the guy said, yes, well, I know you're a stickler about the water. We got it right from the beginning, middle of the river. And Liu Yu's going, I don't think so. And finally, one of the servants said, I'm so sorry, I just spilled the water and I took some from the side. Fortunately, Liu Yu let him off and he didn't get fired or punished. But that's how sensitive these old tea masters supposedly were.
That's incredible.
Yes. Yeah. He had been working very hard lately. When his friends came by one morning, inviting him on a picnic in the country, he had put his brushes and paper away with a sigh, enjoying them happily. They had hiked up into the mountains in the outskirts of the city, reciting poetry to each other at the top of their voices, and Liu Yu had laughed as he had not for some time. They stopped halfway up the mountain and sat and had their meal, a simple affair with a bit of wine. Liu Yu had not even brought his tea things with him, so relieved was he to have a break from his work. His friends decided to take a nap after lunch, so Liu Yu, thrilled to be away from the confines of his studio, hiked a bit more by himself. He had gone some way, sniffing the pure air and reveling in the soft breezes of the countryside, when he noticed a small path off to the side of the main trail. It was very faint, and he would not have seen it if he had not stopped to relieve himself nearby. He decided to follow it and see where it went. After about a half an hour of walking, when he had almost decided to give up and rejoin his friends, he came upon a dilapidated hut. Actually, it was not so much of a hut as a pile of raw lumber laid haphazardly together, its grass roof bald in places, so that surely the rain found its way through. Yet, strangely enough, there seemed to be such an air of peacefulness about it that Liu Yu decided to take a peek inside before setting off again. To his great surprise, there was a man sitting in the hut. At first glance, he seemed as strange as the hut itself. His hair was long and uncombed, as was his long, bushy beard. It looked so bushy that Liu Yu was half expecting a nest of birds to peep out at him. He must be some kind of recluse, thought Liu Yu to himself, although he did not wear his hair in a topknot, as did the Taoists, nor was it shaved, as with the Buddhists. Now, the Buddhist priests shaved their head as a sign of their renunciation for their connection to worldly ties, and the Taoists grow their hair really long. Well, most of them do, and put a little top knot at the top. See, can't have a top knot because it's already. I usually refer to myself as a long-haired bald guy. The strange man just sat there and stared at Liu Yu with a very mild expression, but said nothing. Liu Yu bowed quickly and began to move away when the man seemed to come out of his trance and jumped up, exclaiming, "Good sir, please come in. I was just about to make some tea." At the mention of tea, Liu Yu stopped himself. Perhaps it would be interesting to have tea with this rustic. It may be that the experience would provide some material for his book. If nothing else, it would make for an amusing story to his city friends when he rejoined them. So you see, he's a real tea snob, this guy. And he's like, "Oh, I'm going to have tea with this guy in this little hut. That'll make a good story." So he bowed again and introduced himself. "I am Liu Yu, and I would very much like to have a bowl of tea with you," he said. "Aha," said the man, "I would introduce myself by my good name, but I am afraid I've been too long in the mountains and have forgotten it. You may address me as Master of Simplicity, though I hardly deserve the name. I am afraid this old gourd head of mine," and here he gave his head a resounding knock, "is too full of jumbled thoughts and ideas that swirl all around it like a tide pool to be addressed as anything really but Master of Complications." And here he gave such a deep laugh straight from his belly that Liu Yu could not help but join in. "I'm sure it is not as bad as you say," he said. But the man laughed again and said, "Oh, but it is, and even worse. But I do like to drink tea in the afternoon, and would be honored if you would join me in my humble abode and share a bowl of rather inferior tea with me." Then he laughed again, and Liu Yu joined in. See, in traditional Chinese culture, you always say, you know, "This tea is not really great, I would like to share it with you." You wouldn't say like I do, you know, "This is really expensive tea," really, and stuff. You know, you would just say, you know, the real Taoist master, you say, "Oh, here you are, master." They would never say, "Yes, I am the grand master." They say, "Well, I know a little." That's how you tell the real masters. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people use this term master in the West as kind of a marketing device, really. Mm-hmm. They can charge more for the workshops. But a master is someone who has mastered whatever it is, you know, they're teaching. That they, it is not something just that they teach or that they know, it is who they are. It's how they actually embody the teaching in their very being. That's a real master. Let's see, so where was I? Ah, yes. The Master of Simplicity then turned to the fire, which was blazing merrily along under a pot of water. He invited Liu Yu to sit in the place of honor and plopped himself down beside him. "Please, good sir," he said, "my tea is not very good, but the water I have gathered is from a special spring high in the mountains that only I know about. It does impart a very special taste to the tea." Here, Liu Yu's ears picked up. He had just finished a section of his book on the best kind of water to be used for tea. He had listed all the best types of water, as well as the types not to be used. He had said that water from freely flowing mountain streams was best, and so was excited to learn that this is what was bubbling away in front of him. Mm. See, he's such a tea guy, he's excited about the water. He hasn't even seen the tea or tasted the tea, but he sees that the water is going to be very special, so the tea is going to be very special, so his experience is going to be very special. So the communication between him and the tea and this fellow and the hut, it's all going to be very special. The Master of Simplicity took the water off the fire and laid it aside. "It needs to cool down just a bit right now," he said to Liu Yu. "It has danced enough and now needs to rest before it can begin its work on the tea leaves." So saying, he got up and left the hut and went outside, where he grabbed a handful of long grass and tied his great bushy hair back. He even combed his fingers through his beard, all the while smiling at Liu Yu in such a sweet way that Liu Yu felt his heart warm toward this strange fellow, and Liu Yu found himself smiling right back. "Even if the tea is bad," he thought to himself, "I'm having such an enjoyable time with this strange fellow that it will be worth gagging down whatever outlandish brew he serves me." Tea snob. The Master of Simplicity came back into the hut, sat down, reached over behind himself, and pulled out a simple bamboo container and popped off the lid. "This tea," he said, "is not very good, but it does come from a very old tea tree. I had to climb quite a way up it to get the leaves from the very top. I almost fell off right onto my thick gourd head," he said, laughing. He handed the container of tea to Liu Yu, who upon smelling it was surprised at its fragrance. "Perhaps this tea will not be so bad," he thought. The man was looking at Liu Yu in a funny yet friendly way, and Liu Yu thought he heard him mutter something to himself as he carefully shook out a small amount of leaves into his hand. He then raised his hand and held the leaves out in front of him. He muttered something again, very low, yet very musical. "I'm thanking the god of tea," he said to Liu, "for showing me the way to the ancient tea tree, and for allowing me to gather these leaves, and for helping me not to fall on my head." This time Liu burst into laughter, even before the master of simplicity did. "His name," thought Liu to himself, "sounds like that of a Taoist recluse. Perhaps he's one of those rare Taoist hermits who have shaken the dust of the world off his shoes and gone to live a life of free and easy wandering." Though most of the Taoists that Liu had met in the capital had been much more serious and even austere. "I suppose it could be," thought Liu, "that he is just an eccentric who prefers spending his time in the mountains to living in the crowded city below." The master of simplicity shook out a small handful of the tea leaves and placed them into a small clay pot that stood by the side of the fire. "Now," he said, turning to Liu, "we have to perform the marriage of the tea leaves and the water." He then lifted the pot of hot water, no longer dancing, and poured it very slowly into the pot with the leaves. "We have to go slowly," he said, "so that the water and the tea leaves can greet each other properly." Liu had never heard anyone talk about tea in this way. The tea aficionados that he spent time with were mostly very serious about their tea drinking. True, sometimes they composed poetry, and once in a great while someone told a joke, but mostly everyone took the tea ceremony very seriously. They were all so involved with being at one with the tea that they sometimes lost track of why they were actually there, to enjoy drinking tea. "This tea that we are about to drink," said the master of simplicity, comes about through the marriage of not only the boiling water and the tea leaves, but actually through the union of heaven, which bestows the rain and sunlight on the tea tree, and that of the earth, which gives of itself so that the tea tree may grow tall and strong. It is in this way that this simple bowl of tea represents all of heaven and all of earth, and also the five elements of the tea, the leaves, the plant is wood, grows in the earth. We also use earth to make the teapot and sometimes the cups. The metal also is the minerals that go into the teapot, and the fire of the sunlight, and also the water of the rain, and the tea itself. So all five elements are contained in this little bowl of tea. "Actually," added the master of simplicity, "that is rather a lot for one simple bowl of tea to have to carry." And here he laughed his belly laugh again. The master of simplicity had put the clay pot over the coals of the fire and allowed it to come to a very gentle boil. Liu noticed he had not added anything else to the brew. Liu's friends in the city were used to adding all sorts of things to their tea, such ingredients as ginger, orange peel, or even small onions, which is what people did in Tang Dynasty. Also, Liu was used to drinking his tea from exquisite porcelain bowls. He had friends in the capital who even drank from vessels made from gold and silver.
Wow.
But here the man was pouring the tea into several very wobbly wooden bowls. Liu stretched out his hand and took his bowl of tea from his strange new friend. He held it in front of him and gazed into the bowl, noticing the deep, rich color of the tea. It was true that a few errant wisps of straw had alighted on the surface of the tea, no doubt falling from the dilapidated roof, but he quickly pulled them out. Next, he held the bowl up to his nose and inhaled deeply. "Ah," he thought, this is really very good tea. It has an earthy smell, which was good, but it also had an indefinable odor of freshness. It was almost as though he could smell the light on the leaves as it grew high in the mountain valley. Next, he raised the bowl to his lips and took a small sip, being careful because it was very hot, and also so he could properly appreciate its flavor. Amazingly, it was wonderful. He tried another sip, and then another. It was simply some of the best tea that he had ever tasted. Because of his educated and experienced palate, he could taste the purity of the water that had been used to brew it. It had a slight mineral flavor, but that was good. It was part of what gave the tea its health-enhancing qualities. The taste was both rich and light, and the taste of the wooden lip of the bowl also seemed to give it an earthy flavor. He looked around himself, both at his strange yet gracious host, who was lost in his own moment of tea, and at his surroundings. He had never in his life been in such a dilapidated and rustic building before. Yet he still felt strangely comfortable there, sitting on an old straw mat by the small fire with his newfound tea friend. Okay, and this almost to the end, but I want to force a different tea because I want you to taste something else. And I have to take this tea out of here. So this is...
So what is very important?
Yeah, you know, I did a tea ceremony to somebody down in California this spring, and the woman came the next day to something else I was doing, and she said, you know, I always make tea, I always put the water in the microwave.
Oh, good.
But then this morning I thought, maybe I shouldn't do that. So, yeah, just put it on the stove.
I'm really lucky I live where I have
where the water is good.
Where we have a well.
Oh. I don't know what happened to that. Oh,
what kind of teapot would you use? Copper or stainless?
No, not metal.
To boil the tea.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, this tea is very different. This is a raw tea, raw pu'er tea, and this is a really special tea that I just brought out for you guys. This is the first time I've actually shared this tea with you. This tea, remember I said they would have the tea, they would process it lightly, and then let it sit for 20 years before they would drink it? This tea is about 10 years old. So it's not super, super old, but it's a tea called Moonlight Tea. And I get this from my Chinese friend, who's a Qigong master and a tea master. And this tea is grown by these tribal people in southwest China. And they're still very connected to their shaman traditions. And the shaman people tell them when to pick the tea, and they pick the tea in the fall, and they dry it under the full moon. So it brings out a lot of that really yin, calming, soothing qualities of the moon. That's why we call it moonlight tea. And this is very different tea. You'll notice it's a very different kind of different tea experience. And this one has virtually no caffeine at all. As a matter of fact, for people who have trouble with caffeine, this is a really good tea to drink. And this one, I can just break off very easily because it's got these long. Yeah, you see how long these leaves are.
Is all shou pu'er like that?
This is called sheng pu'er. This is a raw pu'er. The shou pu'er, the dried. Oh, it looks like this. There's a good place. There's a place in San Francisco that has good quality tea called Red Blossom. You know those folks? They're down in Chinatown. I mean, you can go into some like Chinese grocery store and buy tea like this for $25 and pretty much guarantee it's not going to be any good. It's like wine. You know, you can get Manischewitz or you get a really good bottle of tea, of wine. You know, so you have a different experience. I don't have too much of this tea with me. Yeah, that'll do it. The trick with this tea, I don't know if you drink much raw pu'er, Michael.
I don't like it.
You know why? I didn't like it either. You have to when you make the tea, you steep it for like a half minute. That's the secret.
Yeah.
I didn't used to like it because it came out too bitter. It's because I was steeping it wrong. And then I met somebody in Santa Cruz who's a master of the pu'er tea.
But like you said before, once you get hooked on the stronger pu'er, then that's all you really want.
Well, actually, I'm hooked on this raw pu'er now.
Oh,
wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm pouring this one out. Some people feel the raw pu'er is more vitality.
Mm-hmm. Much more expensive, right?
Well,
if you get aged pu'er raw, it's expensive. But
10 years is aged enough?
Well, yeah. I mean, this tea, you know, my friend sells it to me for... Fortunately, he advertises in my magazine because it was like $250 for a round of this tea. But I didn't have to pay any cash for it, so it's all good. Okay, see, now I'm not steeping it. I'm just pouring it right out. That's the secret about raw pu'er. So you might fool around with it a little bit, Michael, and you might...
We can get more servings out of
it. It's equal amount, you know, lots. I could have got a lot more out of that other tea, but I wanted you guys to
also have a chance to try this tea.
So it's a lot paler.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. This is the raw pu'er comes out much later.
Wow.
Make sure I got it all out of there.
Are we using well water?
I don't know what kind of water are we using.
Festival water often is well water.
I think it's it's our water, right? It's a
tap water.
It's a spring water.
It's the mountain spring water.
Yeah, the Mountain River.
Oh, good.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
As the young people say, we used to, in my day we said like groovy. Now they say perfect.
Awesome.
Perfect. Now we're going to do that little bit of a ritual with this one because we're doing a new tea. And I'm sorry you guys don't get to drink a lot of tea. Usually there's only like five or six people drinking.
So you can just put that away for another 10 years? And
oh, yeah.
And
it'll
be
better and better.
It's better and better. How do you store it? What do? Put it in paper? Or?
Yeah, it comes in a paper wrapping usually, and you put it in a cupboard somewhere where it's not going to get damp. Is the main thing you don't want.
You want to keep it in the dark? Or does
refrigerator?
It
dark?
Not in the refrigerator, yeah.
No, I mean as opposed to sunlight?
Some people, you know, are really into it, have these.
Into what?
Who are really, you know, buys the expensive tea, then they have these climate control, you know, rooms and stuff. I don't have anything like that. So.
Yours doesn't last as long, right?
Yeah. I'll just give you a little micro, because you know, micro tea.
I like this one.
So you remember how you hold the cup with the two fingers and then the ring finger underneath? Then we connect it to our heart, to our spirit, our shen, what we call the shen. Chinese believe that the mind also resides in the heart. Like what we think of as intellectual or cognitive aspects of our mind actually relate it in our heart. And then, you know, old days they had thinking about learning something by heart, following your heart, you know, those kinds of ideas. So this also, we look at the color, is very much lighter. So this is, we're connecting our eyes, which connect to our spirit, our shen, to the color of this tea. And we smell the tea. It smells very different. This one has a little bit of smoky flavor. You might not have enough tea to really tell that. But. And then we do the three sips. Front of the tongue, middle of the tongue, back of the tongue. So I'm going to come around with another, and while we're doing the second round, maybe we could have some more of that beautiful music.
Does this make as many rounds?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I could do this 6-8 times really easily.
Thank you.
someone asks you, what do you want, show or show, what would you generally say?
Well, you know, like Michael here likes the show, okay. Cooked. Some people really like that better. It's a darker flavor, it's a richer flavor, more earthy. I've just been experimenting with the raw, and I like both, but I've been drinking a lot of raw lately, and I have different kinds that I try. But, you know, any tea that you have, you can do it as a gong fu. You can do it as a ceremony. You know, you can do it as a spiritual practice. It doesn't have to be expensive Chinese tea. It can be whatever, you know, any of these good quality teas here. You know, these guys carry, you know, whatever you get here, you know, is going to be good quality. And it does, they have some pu'er here, I see. But it, you know, even oolong tea, even a green tea, you can do this way. It's really the spirit that you bring to it. Like in this story, this fellow is talking a lot about like the tea is a living being, right? The way he's explaining it, the way he's sharing it with this tea snob. Suddenly this tea snob is sitting on the ground on this little funky mat drinking tea out of this little funky bowl, and he's having the time of his life because he's with this guy who's really like what they used to call an animist, you know, people that believe that the spirits are alive, especially in nature. Everything is alive and has a spirit. And we've cut ourselves off from that, a lot of us in the West. And so, you know, my generation from the 60s, we did a lot of work with reconnecting to the magic. I just turned 6'6 a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
congratulations.
Yeah, which is kind of, and then I got a new vision, so yeah. Everything's good.
So if you spend a lot of money on the tea, it just reminds you to pay attention to it.
Yes, yeah. But I just want to emphasize, you don't have to become a tea connoisseur and spend a lot of money. But having good quality tea is good. You know, it's like anything, good quality. Okay, let's see. He was drinking it out of the wooden bowl. Ah, yes, he's feeling strangely comfortable sitting on an old straw mat by the small fire with his newfound tea friend. Lu Yu felt himself smiling, and he noticed that the master of simplicity was smiling into his bowl of tea. "This tea," he said slowly, it's the master of simplicity speaking, "reminds me of my home far away from here. To me, it tastes of the sun, the wind, and the earth. It tastes of rain, of dew, and of the rock that ran beneath the water. It reminds me of my past, yet seems to lure me gently into my future." And here he sighed deeply and looked over at Lu Yu. "Truly," he said, "this little bowl of tea has so much to say to me that I could spend all afternoon listening to it." Then he looked up and laughed. "But what I think I will do is drink it." And here he lifted his bowl to his lips and drank the last of the tea in it. Both of the men fell silent then and spent a little time each in his own world while the sun floated over the roof of the hut. Liu Yu suddenly realized he had been gone for some time, and his friends were probably wondering what had happened to him. He got up and bowed to the master of simplicity, saying, "Thank you for a wonderful bowl of tea and for the deep pleasure I have found in your company." The master of simplicity then got up and bowed deeply to Liu Yu. "I too thank you," he said, "for sharing with me this simple brew. Perhaps we will meet again one day and can enjoy this wonderful marriage of heaven and earth again." And here he laughed and began gathering his few tea things and putting them into a frayed basket. Later on, Lu Yu could not remember leaving the hut or walking back down the faint trail back to his friends. I suspect he may have been tea drunk. They were indeed worried about him, and when he told them of his meeting with the master of simplicity and of the wonderful tea he had drunk with him, they wanted to run up the trail to meet this strange tea master. But Lu Yu assured them that the master of simplicity would be long gone by now, and so they made their way back to the city. Sometime after that, Lu Yu finished his treatise on tea as Cha Jing. In it, he listed all the tools for the proper brewing and enjoyment of tea, including the brazier, the stoker, the fire tongs, the basket, the rollers, the measure, the water ladle, the water filter, the water dispenser, among many other things. He listed the types of water to be used and the various elements of tea brewing itself. But then, at the end, he added a strange postscript. After spending much time on the endless list of things that were absolutely necessary for the proper preparation and drinking of tea, he said at the end, "Concerning the proper equipment for brewing tea, if one finds himself among the pines and there is a rock on which to sit, he may omit the utensil rack." He then went on to say that if using firewood, then many of the other utensils may be eliminated, and if one finds a clear running brook or one is climbing up a steep cliff, even more may be dispensed with. Smaller and smaller goes the list until only the bare essentials are listed. Some of his friends could not help but remark upon Lu Yu's afternoon with the master of simplicity, and wondering if perhaps something of his experience there could not help but influence this urbane man of cultivation to the rustic pleasures of a simple bowl of tea in the bosom of nature.
Oh, wow.
The end.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that kind of explains, it's a nice way to learn it to the story.
Now, is that your story? Or
yeah, I wrote that
story. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, this book has, you know, about living your life with tea mind. It has, like, history of tea in China and Japan, how to do Kung Fu tea, health benefits of tea, and then different stories from the Zen as well as the Taoist tradition. Because Zen, of course, is big tea. One of the ancient Zen masters said, you can't know the taste of Zen unless you know the taste of tea. Now, this Japanese, I don't know if you've done any Japanese tea ceremony, very much more formal, very austere. There's no joking around. You're sitting in this room, and everything has to be done in a very precise way. And even when you're drinking the tea, you have to turn the bowl the right way and sip the tea, and it's a very bitter tea. It's a very different experience. The Chinese Kung Fu style is very much more informal. And then, you know, I try to throw some Taoist stuff in there, too.
So you say when you wrote that story, you mean you made it up? It wasn't
yes.
based on... Oh, okay.
I made it up. I mean, Lu Yu is a historical character, of course.
Oh, I see. But you made
and
it up.
But I was thinking about why did he write that book, and why did he suddenly change everything in the end? I thought, I'll follow that thread and see where that takes me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, there's a famous Japanese story where there's this guy who was the... He wasn't the emperor, but he was the ruler of Japan. 77. I don't remember his name. He was a tea aficionado. See, the samurai will pick on tea also.
Mm.
What?
Hideyoshi?
Yeah, Hideyoshi. The samurai... See, in the beginning, the Japanese, you know, there's a little reference in there about Lu Yu drinking out of fine porcelain bowls, and the Japanese, and the emperor in Japan had a solid gold tea house. He would move around and offer people tea, and they used really a lot of it was very ostentatious, really expensive cups. Like you'd invite some over for tea, so you could basically show off all the fancy stuff you had and impress them. And a Zen master named Rikyu, who is a very famous tea master, said all that is against the true spirit of tea. And he started using, he made this really lumpy, irregular kind of porcelain pottery called raku. Raku. People know raku.
Yeah, sure.
It's not all nice and beautiful and round like this. And he made all the utensils out of bamboo and things really simple. And he said, that's the real spirit of tea. In Japan, there's this really beautiful aesthetic called wabi-sabi. People heard of this? Yeah. And it's what it is an appreciation of really things that are really worn, old, not so beautifully round, irregular. You know, it's like a beautiful artistic appreciation of things like that. So the tea houses were made out of recycled wood, the Japanese tea houses. And what was cool is to get into the tea house, the front door was only like that tall, so you have to crawl in. So even the noble lords of the big samurai, to go in the tea house, they too got to get on their hands and knees and crawl through to get into the house. So right away it was a little bit of a way for people to get a little more, what's the word?
Humbling.
It was a humbling kind of thing. But then once you're in there, it's very strict. But this guy Hideyoshi was a warrior, but he was a real lover of tea, and his teacher was Rikyu. And Rikyu was very famous for his gardens too, and he had these flowers. I have to look at what kind of flowers they were. They were famous flowers. See if they were called
Morning Glories.
Morning Glories. Thank you. Well, geez, I don't need this book. Yeah, Morning Glories. Like the Morning Glory Cafe we have in Eugene. So Hideyoshi heard about his garden. He really wanted to see it. He heard he had this vast expanse of morning glories. So he told Rikyu, I'm coming on such and such a date, because it was a big deal for him to come with all his retainers and everything. So the morning came, and he went down the path to the tea house where all the flowers were, and they were all cut down. Every single one of them was gone. And he was horrified, and he was like, where's all the flowers? how could he have done this? And that Riku comes out and bows and says, okay, let's go into the tea. And in the, there's not a lot of stuff all around the walls in the Japanese tea. There's a little alcove. When you, like when you crawl in through, you see this little alcove, and there'd be like, you would just have a little thing of nature or one scroll or something. So Hideyoshi is fuming, but he doesn't say anything to Rikyu because he's trying to keep it together. And he crawls into the hole and he looks up and there's one morning glory on the face. And then he was like, ah. It was a lesson that Rikyu gave him. Yeah, let's do a little more of this one. Let's see, it's almost 9 o'clock. Did you guys have a special time when you wanted? We never even talked.
Generally around 9 o'clock.
Okay, we're going to have one more thing of tea then. We didn't talk about this at all. Yeah, so they have some copies of my Tao Te Ching and my magazine, The Empty Vessel, which is the only Taoist magazine in the country that I've been doing for 23 years. I just started my 24th year.
So you've been in the Tao for a long time.
Yeah, 25, 26 years. You know, I was very ill. I had chronic fatigue syndrome. I was totally bedridden. I had three kids. I was going to Chinese medicine school. I had to drop out of my life, basically. And Chinese herbs got me out of bed, and Qigong is what cured me. So I became a real Qigong guy. So I teach Qigong all over the country. But I also bring in the tea and other aspects of the practice. So there was no magazine. I was reading this magazine called Tricycle at the time, which is a great Buddhist magazine. And I thought, there's nothing like this for Taoism. There's no Taoist magazine. So inspired by Tricycle is kind of where I started the Empty Vessel 23 years ago, 1993. And now I take people on trips to China. We go to China and we go up in the mountains, in the Wudong Mountains, to study with the Taoists up in the mountains, and I'm doing it this year with this really great California Qigong teacher named Jessica Colby, who lives in Santa Barbara. I don't know if you know Jessica Colby. Really dynamic, really fun, really fun.
Where are the Wudong Mountains? Is that
South Central China.
Yeah. Oh, it might be Wuhan. You can get off
Wuhan. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays, apparently you can fly straight to Wudong, but in the old days we would go to Wuhan and drive from there. There's an illuminated.
How many hours from Wuhan?
Oh. From Wuhan? It was 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, 2 or 3. Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't long.
It must be very enchanting.
Yeah, it's been Taoist here for 1,000 years. You know, it's the people there, the practice is very strong, and it's, you know, beautiful to look at, and you can't drive your car up there. You have to take this bus. They don't allow private cars up the road. And it's this road that goes like this, you know, and there's a cliff on this side and the wall on this side. And well, there's a local teacher here that my friend here is studying with, Leslie Wei, whose training was in Wudong Mountain. Does she live here?
Yeah. She's spoken.
Yeah, yeah. I was just with her in Colorado at a Taoist conference there.
Wow, yeah. Amazing.
So if you think you're ever going to be interested in something like this, I have some flyers here. We're going to go in May, springtime. Springtime is a good time to go to China.
It's wonderful to hear that there's still that...
It's actually becoming more popular and more stronger now that the communists have kind of relaxed their hold on people a little bit.
People in China haven't, you know, it's been, religion was totally wiped out during the Cultural Revolution. So now when people find they have a yearning for something spiritual, and so Buddhism and Taoism is becoming much more popular, and also some Catholicism. You guys are also brave. You just drink whatever tea I bring. You just never drink it. I think I'll go get some more.
I almost missed it. I thought it was Saturday.
Oh.
And I was walking past the shop when we got to the shop here today. And I saw the check and then I saw the flag. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, Jen lives partially time anyway in Eugene.
We were just having tea this summer out under our giant willow tree, her and my girlfriend Shanti.
Oh my gosh. In China?
No, in Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, in Eugene, Oregon.
It's like a little part of China. It's in Eugene, Oregon. I'm going to... Michael, have you been to the tea house in Santa Cruz, Hidden Peak? Oh, I've heard really good things about that.
It's really nice.
I'm going there in a few days.
Who runs that?
This guy named David. Doesn't allow any cell phones or anything in his tea house. Doesn't never use the computer.
Oh.
He's an like old-fashioned guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Dobra places, like in Ashland?
Oh, I went to a little downstairs kind of tea house there once. Oh, no, what you're thinking of, yeah, I haven't been to that one, but they have good stuff, too.
Yeah, the Dobra tea. Yeah, they've got a good menu that explains the different teas.
Oh, that's good.
Did you go to Dushanbe when you were in Colorado?
I was in this park. Yeah, I wasn't, I was way up. So Leslie Duke, her fan, and there were a bunch of people doing these martial arts demonstrations. And she was like a gazelle, like leaping in the air. She's so beautiful. Any questions before we kind of fade out, fade in?
Is that morning glory, a little morning glory? Isn't that kind of hallucinogenic?
Oh, perhaps.
Yeah,
morning glory seeds, I think. There was some strain of them. Yeah.
So have you seen any good combinations with it? Can you milk it? Milk tea with this or
I wouldn't
sugar
put milk
sugar
in this kind of tea or
no?
Sugar. No, no.
Kind of.
Well, you know, if you want to, you can. Traditionally, you
would. Just keep it simple, out in the woods.
I mean, drinking this tea, this is why we sit outside when the weather's good, and we have a little table, and we set everything up and sit outside and drink the tea. It's really the best. You know, I have this great book about this guy, Baisho, who was a Japanese Zen master who became a tea master and just would set, like in ancient times, and just set himself up by creeks and rivers and serve tea to people. My friends in Taiwan, that's what they do. They go to the market every week and just set up and offer tea to people, you know, outside.
Oh, have you seen those tea houses in Taiwan? Some of them in the mountains? Wow.
I haven't been to Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Amazing, some of those tea houses.
But I just got invited to a wedding in Yunnan province a couple days ago by a friend of mine who's a tea person who's marrying this village girl from one of the tribes with these amazing outfits and lives up way up in there where they grow the puer tea. So I'm thinking to go. Part of that. Mm.
So, can I share a formula?
A formula?
Yeah.
Sure.
Combining ginger with one of the dark puers.
Oh.
Like, I discovered it a few years ago, and like on a Saturday afternoon, I was really tired, but I had a lot of, you know, house yard work to do. So I pulled from my understanding about how powerful ginger can be, and so I experimented, but what I came up with is making some regular boiled, you know, sliced ginger root, boiled that for like the regular like 15 minutes to get a strong ginger, you know, base
decoction
out of that.
Yeah.
And then I added some regular puer, the leaves, right into the boiling pot. And then I discovered that it needed another full 10 minutes of boiling the puer.
What? Oh.
And so it was like super strong.
Oh, good heavens.
And then I drank it, and like instantly, jolt of energy.
Oh.
Wow.
And so now I refer to that as like a real tonic, you know, combining the best of ginger and the best of puer for like when you're really feeling low in energy, you're maybe coming down with something, and it's so it's a real powerful, you know, special boost for that.
We've also mixed dried rose petals in with the dark pu'er. It's also really good. I'd suggest you try that.
Every morning I drink chai, yogi chai tea, and I mix some ginger root in there and some mint from my garden and some comfrey leaf and sometimes some rose petals.
Oh, okay. Yes.
How do you buy it? Like with how do you buy the tea? You know, just by the gram or something, or
this tea?
Yeah.
Oh, well, usually it comes in these round cakes.
Oh, so you just kind of buy a cake. You look at a cake and buy it.
Yeah, well, I buy them from people that I know.
Well, you can buy it here by the ounce.
By the ounce.
They have some here. They have some right here behind Jen.
Right here.
There's some, yeah.
And over here.
And then they have some smaller ones, too. They're called the Torcha, the small versions. Yeah, they've got a bunch of pu'ers here. I would trust these guys to have good quality, too. It's probably not the most expensive, but really good quality.
Hopefully.
So that's even better. So I mostly just, you know, I want to leave you with this idea that tea can be something people think of tea as, you know, you make a mug of tea and just drink it, you know, or down it, and that this idea that tea can be a ritual, tea can be a meditation, tea can be a spiritual practice. And it has health benefits as well as psychological and spiritual benefits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thank you all for coming out and thank these guys for having me. And I have the magazine there. I have a few of my CDs. I have a CD called Mountain Gate, which is big Tibetan bowls and a creek I recorded in Eugene, a little Native American flute. Mm-hmm. So I've got a few. And there's one CD that's guided meditations. Three different guided meditations with my music behind it.
Well, thank you on behalf of Many Rivers. We really appreciate it. We greatly appreciate you all coming out tonight. And do check these resources out, both Empty Vessel, and there's different.
I took it already.
Editions of the journal here for you to look at. Plenty of copies of Practicing the Tao Te Ching and the CDs, as well as some other resources. So thank you all for coming. Also, we have a donation bowl over there. We're asking a little higher donation because we don't usually have someone serving tea, and we want to recompense him for the money that he has spent on that, not to mention coming down from Eugene. And so please do check that out. And thank you all for coming tonight.
Yay.